Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 24th, 2014. South Sudan's government delegation returned home from the peace talks in Addis Ababa with a message for residents of Juba.
We should not give up, we should not lose hope, but be optimistic and know that peace is just coming, it is around the corner.
And South Sudan Minister of Defense says Ugandan troops will not leave Juba anytime soon.
We know the presence of UPDF here is not only for the defense of Juba, but also protecting the interests of Uganda.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan's peace talks in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, have collapsed and the delegates have returned home. Speaking to reporters at Juba Airport a few hours ago, government chief negotiator Nyal Deng Nyal says South Sudan government does not agree with the rebels' demands.
We take the view that civil society organizations, political parties, faith-based groups are independent. And so whichever persons are selected to represent these categories basically represent the whole country, the whole of South Sudan.
Nyal says the opposition is returning to its initial demand that only warring parties negotiate face-to-face amongst themselves. Minister of Information and Government spokesperson Michael Makui says his government is still willing to negotiate with the rebels and other stakeholders. He says they will not bow down to demands of the opposition.
We are still anxious for peace. The position of the government is that we are ready to negotiate with anybody, anywhere, anytime, so that we achieve peace. That is the message. We should not give up. We should not lose hope. But be optimistic and know that peace is just coming. It is around the corner.
The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, which sponsored the talks in Addis, has given both sides until August 9 to reach a final deal. South Sudan's defense minister says, despite calls by the opposition for Ugandan army to leave South Sudan, the Ugandan People's Defense Forces, or UPDF, will remain in the country until security conditions improve. For VOA News, Mungume Devs Rakarinj has the story from Juba.
Defense Minister Kol Manyang Juk says the UPDF will not leave the country until the Regional Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, has deployed a regional force to keep peace and secure vital installations. He says the regional force, once it is deployed, will deter security threats, not just in South Sudan.
You know, the presence of UPDF here is not only for the defense of Juba, but also protecting the interests of Uganda. For example, if there was fighting in Juba here, Juba was to come here, and people get displaced, they go to Uganda, there will be massive movement of the population to Uganda. And that will make the life very difficult for even for the Ugandans.
The UPDF has fought alongside SPLA forces ever since violence erupted in Juba in mid-December. Both Kampala and Juba have insisted the UPDF are here to secure government installations and ensure safe passage for foreign nationals leaving the country. Opposition leader Riek Machar has demanded that the UPDF withdraw from South Sudan completely as a precondition for negotiations. But Juk warns the withdrawal of the Ugandan army could lead to a resurgence of Ugandan Lord's Resistance Army, or LRA rebels, who have murdered and abducted thousands of civilians in Uganda, the DRC, and the Central African Republic.
Once there is lawlessness in this area, then the LRA can easily come in and will again disturb Uganda.
LRA rebels also killed and maimed hundreds of people in South Sudan's western Equatorial state. Juk says his government has nothing to lose since Uganda is footing the UPDF bill in South Sudan.
We are not paying the UPDF. UPDF is paying itself. Their government is paying them. So we're not spending money for the presence of the UPDF, the Uganda People's Defense Force, in South Sudan.
Juk says the UPDF will only withdraw after there is a comprehensive peace agreement signed by both sides to cease hostilities. IGAD is expected to deploy peacekeepers with the mandate of ensuring peace and stability in the country. Not everyone in Uganda agrees with keeping UPDF forces in South Sudan. Last week, some Ugandan lawmakers demanded their government withdraw the Ugandan troops from their neighbor to the north. For VOA News, I'm Mugumedev Surakarinj in Juba.
Hours after international human rights group began celebrating the release of Sudanese mother Mariam Yahya Ibrahim from a Khartoum prison, word came today that Mariam was rearrested while trying to abort a plane in Khartoum. Lawyer Mohammed Jar Nabi told VOA News Mariam and her family were prevented from boarding the plane and rearrested. Mariam Ibrahim was convicted of apostasy and sentenced to death last month. Yesterday, President Omar al-Bashir ordered she be set free. Rabi Abdelati, a prominent leader in Sudan's ruling party, told VOA fellow Nabil Biagio yesterday that Mariam's case was under the control of the presidency.
This case has been transferred to the president, and the president released according to the authority that he has according to the constitution of Sudan. Also, according to our jurisprudence, is having a broad variety that a lot of scholars in Islam saying that there is no punishment for the people who change their religion, and some of them, they say that the punishment of execution should be implemented on such people who are changing their religion from Islam to any other religion. But according to the constitution of our country, that is the authority. Even if there is a rule like that, the final rule will be the decision to be taken by the president of the Sudan. And accordingly, the president approved and released Mary.
The ruling, the first ruling of the death sentence was based on Article 126 of the penal, that's based on Sharia law. Are you saying that code, that article is going to be like cancelled, or this is like a special case?
The rule of sentencing by this court is a subject to be revised and to be looked into by our president. Any case of execution should be referred to the president, and the president, even according to Sharia, is having the full authority to decide. And I think that in this case also, our president is not ruling something violating Islamic Sharia.
There is a lot of concern about her safety, the safety of Mariam Ibrahim, her children, and her husband. Even the lawyers, they have been receiving death threats from some radical circles, some groups in Khartoum. What is the government going to do to protect her and her husband?
You know, this is the responsibility of the government to protect all citizens. And I think that this arrangement should be taken by the government, and whatever the case, the government is responsible, and all precautions and arrangements should be taken. I don't know what measures will be taken, but I can confirm that this is the full responsibility of our government to protect civilians and not to allow anybody to harm somebody without any right.
And if she wants to travel like outside the country with her husband, would that be a problem?
Nobody will stop her, but, you know, everybody in Sudan, whenever he wants to travel or to go abroad, some formalities to be completed, and after that, the person can leave the country. This is according to the system of traveling and the procedure which is required for the man or the woman that they want to travel and to leave Sudan.
That's Rabi Abdelati, a prominent leader in Sudan's ruling party, speaking to VOA fellow Nabil Biagio. The decision to free Mariam came amid uncertainties over her safety. The U.S. State Department welcomed the decision to free Mariam and her 19-year-old son and her one-month baby, which she gave birth to while in custody. The U.S. also renewed its call for Sudan to, quote, repeal its laws that are inconsistent with its 2005 interim constitution, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, end quote. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights says she is shocked and alarmed by the verdicts and heavy jail sentences handed down on three Al Jazeera journalists by an Egyptian court. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva. The commissioner is urging Egyptian authorities to promptly release them and other media workers in prison for doing their job.
Al Jazeera journalists Peter Gresta, Mohamed Fahmy, and Baha Mohamed have been languishing in Egyptian prison cells for months on charges of aiding the Muslim Brotherhood. Monday, the men were convicted and sentenced to prison terms of between 7 and 10 years. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Navi Pillay says she is appalled by these verdicts. Her spokesman, Rupert Colville, says she sees them as just the latest in a string of prosecutions and court cases that are in breach of international human rights law.
Probably the worst of all are these huge mass trials that took place earlier in the year of people who are allegedly Muslim Brotherhood supporters, but not just put on trial for being a supporter of an organization that is now deemed to be a terrorist organization, but actually condemned to death. And those court cases were really shocking. I mean, the High Commissioner today called them obscene because there were hundreds of people, more than 500 in one case, 600 in another. There were such cursory cases, and then people were sentenced to death. So that's clearly, you know, an absolute travesty of justice.
These cases and those of the Al Jazeera journalists as well as others are being tried under Egypt's anti-terrorism law and the so-called protest law. Colville says these laws appear to be used by the judiciary and others to silence people who are critical of the government. He tells VOA there should never have been a case against the journalists who were just doing their job. He notes international journalists usually enjoy some measure of protection against state harassment and intimidation. He says the situation of local journalists already is terrible and getting worse.
We know of at least six journalists who've been killed in Egypt in the past year and a half or so. But others have been beaten up, been attacked, been arrested, been prosecuted, or been sacked, you know, because they're deemed to have been reporting on sensitive issues. There's a climate of real fear surrounding journalism in Egypt these days, and obviously this case will just make it even worse.
The cases of the three Al Jazeera journalists are expected to be appealed. High Commissioner Pillay says Egypt's reputation, especially that of its judiciary as an independent institution, are at stake. She adds there is a risk that miscarriage of justice is becoming the norm in Egypt. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Egypt, we go back to Uganda. Ugandan officials and refugees say relations between South Sudanese refugees and the host community have improved in Uganda's Adjumani refugee settlement. Two deaths occurred and several people were wounded after two communities fought each other in the past. Both sides say a new refugee welfare committee has helped to resolve conflict not only between locals and refugees, but between refugees themselves. Bonifacio Taban visited Adjumani refugee settlement camps for VOA News. He filed this report.
Asisi Fascal, Deputy Refugees Desk Officer in Uganda Office of the Prime Minister, which handled refugees affairs, say this office record high number of violence conflicts between the local population and refugees early this year. Refugees at the settlement said in April and May, two refugees died following fight broke out between members of the local community and refugees over resource, including water. They said an 18-year-old refugee man was killed in one of such clash at the end of April. And a teenager's refugee girl was killed after a dispute among Dinka communities in the Nyumadhi resettlement camp in mid-May. Abala Odier, a 40-year-old mother of six, said he was among the nine people wounded during a fight between South Sudanese Murle community and the host Mahdi community in April.
We were attacked at home, and then we ran into the bush and some people caught me. They beat me until my hand got broken. And then the NGO Church Aid came to visit me in the hospital and I was treated. And you can see my hand is not good, but somehow I am surviving.
Court said, though she ran from South Sudan to escape conflict, he does not exactly feel safe at the refugee settlement either.
There are no good living conditions here. Even after I was injured, my hand got a wound. I did not receive good medical treatment, and now my hand is still swelling, and no, there is no medicine provided.
Pascal says most conflicts were recorded in Nyumadhi, Mugla and Broly settlement in response to the Prime Minister's office form a refugees welfare committee made up of refugees and local to resolve conflicts that surfaced between the two communities. Hassan Kuku Kafi, chairman of a peace committee in the settlement camp, said he's trying to improve relations with local residents.
We are staying under the protection of the Ugandan government and the UNHCR. These citizens who are here, they are our brothers, and they are the ones who offered land for our settlement. There is no way we divide ourselves from them. We must find ways to stay together in peace.
But Joseph Okelo Welo, a resident from Broly camp, complained that though aid agencies have mediated peace talks between the refugees and local, not seeing any improvement in relation.
It's because of the intervention from the local agencies who are working here. A lot of meeting has been held, and also the administration of the settlement is changed. The person who was leading the settlement, the camp commander, was changed, and a new person is brought in who is doing his best level to maintain the peace.
But Peter Deng Alwengs, the acting chairman of Nyamazi camp, said the situation there has improved.
The only problem is just these are minor issues, like the ladies are just being quarreling on the borehole, and maybe they fight, just beat themselves or slap themselves. These are the only minor things that cannot be considered.
Officials said Alere settlement camp, located in the northwestern part of Adjumani district, has been peaceful for the last 6 months ever since South Sudan refugees began arriving. The camp accommodates the South Sudanese Mahdi, Nuer, Kuku, and Dinka communities. Kume Roberts, a resident of Alere, said their areas has largely remained peaceful because the residents are united regardless of their ethnic backgrounds.
Anyway, our relationship between this Dinka, Nuer, and the other tribes, we are normal. Our staying with them is okay because we know that we are all Southern Sudanese. So what is happening then in Southern Sudan, we cannot bring it here in Uganda, because here we are in the hem.
Authority in Adjumani said they have apprehended two murderer suspects and they will be prosecuted in a court of law. They said they are urging the refugees and local residents to live in peace by forming more peace committee like the one helped resolve conflicts in the Adjumani refugee settlement. For BOA News, I'm Boniface Yetaban, reporting from Adjumani District, Northern Uganda.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Spoiled or contaminated food poses a serious health hazard, particularly for children and the elderly. The World Health Organization reports that thousands of Africans die every day from food-related diseases. Experts suggest these steps to help protect you and your family. Before preparing food, it's very important to wash your hands. This can prevent most cases of food poisoning. Only cook with fresh meat and fish. To avoid the spread of harmful bacteria, never prepare raw meat or fish on the same board or surface used to prepare vegetables or grain. Make sure meat, fish, and eggs are cooked thoroughly. Store leftover foods in covered containers in a cool location out of the sun. Do not consume food that smells rotten or contains mold or other impurities.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, humanitarian officials are raising alarm about Middle East respiratory syndrome.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
Put your flags up in the sky. Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit voafootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at voafootball.com.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes a good boss at work?
One who listens to their staff, has a staff welfare, and one who the staff can look up to as a role model.
What makes a good boss at the work is the cooperation. When a boss cooperates with his subordinates, the work will be achieved.
At work, I expect a good boss to be involved, not only involved in what he or she's doing, but getting involved in the tasks that are assigned to other partners.
What makes a good boss at work is being so kind and also talking nice to the employees.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS. The World Health Organization says the situation regarding the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome remains serious, but it will not declare a public health emergency at this time. WHO says the disease is of concern because of anticipated travel later this year for Umrah, Ramadan, and the Hajj. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
There have been more than 700 confirmed cases of MERS and about 250 deaths. The WHO Emergency Committee, set up to monitor the outbreak, says the upsurge in cases seen in April has significantly decreased. It adds that significant efforts to improve infection prevention and control were being undertaken in the Middle East. What's more, there is still no evidence of person-to-person transmission in communities. Dr. Keiji Fukuda is the WHO's Assistant Director General for Health Security.
On the basis of those lines of information, the Emergency Committee assessed that the current situation does not constitute a public health emergency of international concern.
It's suspected the coronavirus that causes MERS is transmitted from camels to humans. However, no one knows yet how that might happen. But there's also a risk of infection at health facilities when precautions are not taken.
Our current understanding is that the upsurge in cases is primarily related to transmission occurring in hospitals, in essence, primarily related to suboptimal infection prevention and control measures. So many of the cases that were thought to have occurred in the community are really related to infections occurring in hospitals.
Fukuda says the hospital outbreaks will be studied further.
Patients often meet before they have a diagnosis in crowded areas such as emergency rooms and emergency departments, and what exactly is the breakdown in infection and prevention control measures there.
The WHO Emergency Committee continues to advise countries to strengthen efforts to implement basic infection prevention and control measures and increase education about MERS for healthcare workers. It also says critical investigations regarding case control, as well as blood, environmental, and animal studies, should be completed as soon as possible. Dr. Fukuda says the WHO is calling on vulnerable countries, especially those in Africa, to be prepared for MERS cases later this year.
In the African countries, we have two important conditions. One of them is that there are a sizable number of people who travel every year to Saudi Arabia and to the Middle East as part of pilgrimages and then as part of other reasons for traveling. And secondly, in the African countries, there are some basic capacities which remain limited. And so some of these basic capacities are things such as surveillance and in the healthcare facilities, standards for infection prevention and control can often be suboptimal.
Fukuda says it's also important to raise awareness among pilgrims about Middle East Respiratory Syndrome and the importance of personal hygiene when traveling. Saudi Arabia is also reported to be stepping up surveillance and prevention measures in anticipation of the Hajj. Fukuda says it will take a significant amount of work to determine just how the virus may be transmitted from camels to humans.
For example, is it because camels sneeze? Is it because that there may be a contamination of virus in things such as milk products? Even if we find virus in these things, it still doesn't tell us exactly that this is how people are getting infected.
He says what seems like a simple question to answer requires many studies. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Health officials in Africa are concerned about another potentially deadly condition. A human rights organization says thousands of people in a poor district on the outskirts of Mombasa, Kenya, face serious health problems from toxic lead at a former battery recycling plant. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf reports the group says at least three workers at the smelter have died and more than 3,000 people are affected by contamination.
As Kenya hosts the first UN Environment Assembly attended by global environmentalists, government officials and lobby groups, a community in Kenya's second largest city, Mombasa, is facing health and economic challenges from poisonous lead. Speaking in Nairobi, Human Rights Watch senior environment researcher Jane Cohen says a whole community is under threat because Kenyan authorities have not acted to enforce the law.
It should not go unnoticed that not very far from Nairobi, there is a situation, Owino Uhuru, the situation in Owino Uhuru community, which is a tragic example of what happens when economic development is unregulated.
At issue is a battery recycling plant that opened in 2007. The New York-based Human Rights Watch says the plant closed its operations earlier this year and moved elsewhere. But the lead remains in the community and needs to be cleaned up by the government swiftly. A former office worker at the plant, Phyllis Omido, started organizing protests and writing to relevant authorities asking to move the plant or shut it down. She says she started a campaign after her son got sick and doctors confirmed he had lead poisoning, a devastating neurological illness that causes severe developmental problems in small children and broader health concerns in adults. Omido says her campaign was able to prove the battery plant was the source of the contamination.
And we went to government chemists and convinced them to run tests on some of the children. And we picked them randomly. We could not afford it, so we took three children randomly from the community. All of them tested very high lead levels, that is in 2009. And we took this to government with the recommendation of government chemists that these children were obviously exposed to lead poisoning.
Human Rights Watch says a government investigation in 2009 found the battery plant had violated regulations. The smelter was briefly shut down and reopened, but environmental activists say the problems were not addressed. Former plant workers say they had no protective clothing or gear to deal with the poisonous lead. Human Rights Watch notes Kenya has strong environmental laws to protect its citizens, but they need enforcement. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song and then a ballad Jadid by original Ras Corby. Listening to South Sudanese reggae artist original Ras Corby with the song and then a ballad Jadid. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Oh,
man, Kubal Kawajat, Omonukurat, Macha.